The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
The following is brought to you in part by MFC Studios. The views and opinions of the show's hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect those of the owners, management, or staff of WGBB. And now, it came from the radio.
And welcome once again to It Came From The Radio. This is your host, Mario Torres, speaking. With me in the studio, I am quote-unquote by myself, our very own Hassan Godwin. If he's listening, I apologize for messing up his name. I've known him long enough to not mess up his name. Should be calling in shortly, and our very own Charlie Salazino, senior correspondent, should be gingerly walking in. But in the meantime, I do have Brian the engineer and Kara the ex-intern, who believes she is the great one, here with us for another 2 weeks, right? This week and then the week after. So if anybody's having any trouble listening to us on the air, you can go online to www.am1240wgbb.com, listen to us on the live audio streaming. Also on the GBB website, you can see us, the three of us, on the live in-studio web camera right now, provided that you're listening to us right this second, as opposed to listening to us sometime in the future, which you'll be listening to us talking about us in the past, unless you're watching us a week from now, which will be here in the present, but still be talking about something else, and you'll see us in the studio. So now I'm just going to take it away with the news. As always, the news is brought to you in part by the Rat Bastards at Belmore Towing, located in Belmore, New York. Always happy to give you a summertime deal with such great practices as charging you $50 for a $7 lug nut. So if you ever have any trouble and you want to be being taken care of, they'll take care of you very well at Belmore Towing in Belmore, New York. And the movie that we're trying to make a real thing, Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Monkey Killer, is where Abraham Lincoln comes out of retirement, because he's a vampire now, and to fight the apes that's taken over, who have become vampires themselves. So we're going to be having that coming soon to a theater near you, which would be awesome. So we're going to make it a thing. Let's see. So we're going to start off with the sad, sad news. And man, do I have a lot of sad news here. All right. Marilyn Burns, most famous for her role as Sally Hardstreet, the only survivor in the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre in the movie, has died this past month. She was found dead in her home by a family member in Houston. A cause of death had not been released. Of note, this was her very first role, and coming full circle, she reprised her role in A Return of Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The Next Generation, and made a cameo appearance in 2013's Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3D. It was her third Texas Chainsaw Massacre appearance and one of her final roles. She also appeared in the 2014 horror film The Sacrament. She was only 65. It's always kind of sad when people who have a mainstay in a horror movie that they really don't branch out too much else, but they become like a part of your life, where you're watching this one movie that did this one role and it's very memorable, and then they pass away and you're like, wow, I can't believe so much time has passed and they've only done a handful of things. But our thoughts and prayers go out to her family. Also, speaking of a role that is defined by the person, Charles Keating, best known for his role as the reform villain Carl Hutchinson on Another World from 1983 to 1985 and returning in 1991 to 1998, has died after a long battle with cancer. Charles also starred in such soaps as All My Children, Poor Charles, As the World Turns, as well as having roles in Sex and the City, Xena, Alias, and feature films such as The Bodyguard, The Thomas Crown Affair, and Deuce Bigelow, European Gigolo. He was only 72. I didn't know that was his name, but when you're ever just passing on the television and you turn on to Another World, you see this one old dude with a ponytail. He had like pepper hair, and he had a little tiny mustache. That's the guy. It's like, oh, that guy. That's terrible. You know, it's one of those things that, you know, he's always there, and then he's not. So once again, our thoughts and prayers out to his family and friends. And we have, who we have on there?
Who you have so soon. They forget so soon.
Yes, Mr. Goodwin. Hello, Mr. Goodwin.
Goodwin?
There you
How
go.
Long you find them when you
I just see that's what you get for not listening earlier. So calling from a homotory is our very
homotory,
own
yes.
Hassan
well,
Gowen.
Well, not actually home, but yeah, it would be home if I was home.
It's homotory. It's still homotory. It doesn't have to be home to be homotory.
Okay, I don't have to actually be there to be in homotory.
Right.
Okay, fair enough.
Okay, you're like, you can be on the house arrest, but not at your own house.
Yes, I'm where someone else lives, so it is someone's home.
So you're in someone else's homotory.
Yes, I mean, yeah.
Okay.
I don't have a clever way to say it.
All right, so we're actually in the middle of doing our sad news, so let's carry on with that. Screen legend Lauren Bacall also died this week of a stroke. Lauren starred in such films as, oh boy, here we go, To Have and Have Not, The Big Sleep, Dark Passage, Key Largo, The Mirror Has Two Faces, Confidential Agent, The Passage to Maricel, Written on the Wind, Designing Women, The Gift of Love, Shock Treatment, Sex and the Single Girl, How to Marry a Millionaire, Murder on the Orient Express, The Shootist, The Fan, Mr. North, Misery, My Fellow Americans, and The Forger, just to name a few. Whew. She was the recipient of an honorary Academy Award in 2010 for, quote, in recognition of her central place in the golden age of motion pictures. However, in an interview, she was quoted as saying that being a, quote-unquote, legend and, quote-unquote, special lady of the film was unnerving because, she said, in my slight paranoid head, legends and special ladies don't work. It's over for them. They just go around being legends and special ladies. Of note, Lauren wrote two memoirs, By Myself in 1978 and Now in 1994. Her final role was she had a guest star in an episode of Family Guy titled Mom's the World, which aired on March 9th of this year. And she was only 89.
I didn't even know about that. That's too bad.
Yeah, it's actually falls under the, this is what happened when Michael Jackson had died.
Yeah.
Farrah Fawcett died just like right before. And
yeah,
then, like, ah.
Completely outshined. Yeah.
You're like, oh, Farrah Fawcett. Who? Like, oh, man, poor Farrah Fawcett. That was just some bad timing.
And she made it to, like, her 80s, you know, and she died of for all intents and purposes, natural causes.
Right.
Of, you know, whatever. So, I mean, she didn't die spectacularly, you know, in some kind of theatrical way.
Right.
So, like Michael Jackson and, like, Robin Williams.
Right.
Kinda, you know, so there's no story there. So there was nothing for the masses to munch on.
But you know? She was she was the big time movie actress. That was one of the things and that is kind of underscored. It's kind of sad in and of itself, but you know, we want to make sure we recognize her. Once again, thoughts and prayers
out to her
family. And finally, as Hassan mentioned, from the desk of Hassan Godwin, Robin Williams, most famous for, well, everything, died this week. Robin's wife, Susan, says, this morning I lost my husband, my best friend. While the world lost one of its most beloved artists and beautiful human beings, I am utterly heartbroken. On behalf of Robin's family, we are asking for privacy. We are asking for privacy during our time of our profound grief. As he is remembered, it is our hope that the focus will not be on Robin's death, but on countless moments of joy and laughter he gave to millions. For those of you who don't know, Robin got his big break playing Mork in what was supposed to be a one guest star role on Happy Days. That one spot spun off through the show Mork and Mindy, which ran from 1978 to 1982. Afterwards, he starred in such movies as The World According to Garp, Moscow on the Hudson, Awakening, Birdcage, Mrs. Doubtfire, Patch Adams, AI Artificial Intelligence, Dead Poets Society, The Fisher King, Good Morning Vietnam, Insomnia, and of course, Popeye, to name a few.
Look.
Also, he did, well, I said the name of you. Also, he did some voice acting.
I named one.
Also, he did some voice acting in such films as Aladdin, Happy Feet, Robots, and Ferngully.
And Hook.
He returned to television in last season's CBS comedy series, The Crazy One, opposite star Michelle Geller.
Right.
Of note,
got
he won.
Canceled,
yes.
Unfortunately.
Of note, he won an Academy Award, 2 Emmys, 5 Grammys, and 6 Golden Globes. And he committed suicide at the age of 63.
The internet has gone insane over Robin Williams' death, by the way.
Yes.
To the point where they have you have a bad journalist mocking other bad journalists for their bad way of tributing such a legend as Robin Williams. And it's just, it's terrible how, I mean, the good thing about it, and I'll be brief, the good thing about it is that people are aware that it's a feeding frenzy for, you know, it's like kind of a grieving feeding frenzy. And so, you know, people are getting kind of pissed about it, but the other problem is that even the people who are pissed about it are also feeding off of the greedy grieving trough. So it's just pretty bad. I mean, I don't know how it's going on television because I haven't been watching television, but I can see on the internet it's been pretty bad. It's been pretty insane.
Yeah, it really has been. That's why I stress that she said that she wants some privacy.
Yeah.
Like, you know, come on, this is some bad
times. I know,
times.
But I mean,
it's gotten so bad. There was the last thing I read before I just gave up on the whole thing was his daughter was being attacked on Twitter for not sharing enough pictures of her and her father, and for not acting the way that she is quote-unquote supposed to act in her grievances, so much so that she actually had to suspend her Twitter account. So that's how crazy it's gotten.
They attacked, well...
Yes, they're like, you know, you're a bum, you're this, you're that.
I got something serious to say about that stuff, and I'll get to that a little later if there's any time. So let's... But, I mean, that is rampant now, and
yes.
it needs to stop. The people out there, the fans, the you know, the Twitterverse, the blogosphere, all these verses and spheres and whatever, it all needs to stop because these people are just mongrels, they're idiots, they're you know, savages. And that comes from, of course, the death of the song God, when it's not to be confused when it came from the radio exclusively.
Right.
But for the heck's sake, you know, everybody needs to grow the heck up. It really, I'll have much more to say about it later because there's like an actual incident that happened, a couple other things, you know, and a couple of questions I have, whatever. But I don't want to, you know, I don't know what the schedule for today is, so I won't take it up with my typical blah, blah, blah.
Okay, well, we do have a guest coming in at the half of the show, so.
Sure we do.
All right, so speaking of people coming in, our very own Charlie Saladino, Syrian correspondent, gingerly walked in while we were reading the news, and he has anything to say is the question I have on his mind.
Gingerly?
He gingerly walked in.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay. Did I gingerly walk in
like,
when I called?
Like no. a cat, yes.
Yes.
Cat-like reflexes. No, I agree with Hassan about this becoming a full-fledged, you know, just a media carnival here with Robin Williams. It's a sin. All our prayers go to the family, and that's it. That's all you can do. And just love his movies, and just be happy for all the happiness he gave us. And that's it. And leave the family
tremendous.
Alone.
What Robin Williams gave us is tremendous. Like,
oh,
his work can't really be quantified. It really can't be.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's been around since I can remember. You know, it's, you know, certainly, I mean, he's been around as in famous for as long as I can remember.
Right.
And so it's just absolutely, you know, it's impossible, like, to do a tribute to you know, to praise him or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, and of course, it's inevitably, it gets dark with these kind of bozos out there. And this is the issue. There are always, people were always idiots. And they were always bozos and morons and jerk weeds and stuff like that. But we didn't always have to know about them. They didn't. They couldn't always publicize.
They didn't have the circle of attention drawn to them.
Yeah, they didn't publish. They didn't have the ability to publicize their stupidity. And so now we have to suffer through miles and miles and piles of this craziness of these people, these uncouth, immature monsters. With no checking mechanism on them. There's no checks and balances on this stuff.
Well, these are crepe hangers who wait for this opportunity to jump on that train, the idiot train.
Yeah, and it's mostly, unfortunately, the modern day journalism is very little more than a bunch of fanboys with a blog. That's basically what modern journalism is. And like, unless it's on television, you know, anything you read off of a site on the internet, you have no idea where any of that stuff came from or what the credentials of some of these people are.
Yeah.
And they're just savages. They really are. They just say whatever comes to their mind. They say whatever shock value. It's just monstrous. It's empty calories. It's got no value whatsoever. So, and you know, I mean, of course, I have tons more to say on it, but that's as far as I can.
And whatever you have to say, I must say ditto on it, because I just feel the same way about it, the whole thing.
So speaking of things that have no inherent value in an empty flesh.
How did that even happen? How is that even possible?
In a recent interview, Hot Megan Fox was asked about how she felt.
Wait a minute. Her name is Megan Fox.
It got legally changed. It got legally changed.
It has not legally changed.
It was legally changed to Hot Megan Fox. It's like only like six celebrities that have that.
What did I just say about journalism?
Well, that's how I segue into it. That was part of the segue.
That's
I went
not
a segue into it. Anyway, she was asked how she felt about some of the online backlash against her newest movie, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Oh,
she replied, "Let me tell you something about those people. How much money do Transformers 4 make? Exactly. Those people can complain. They'll all go to the theater. They're going to love it. And if they don't, they can beep off, and that's the end of that."
You know, if I close my eyes, I feel that Megan Fox was right in the studio with me.
Yeah.
The hot Megan
Spot
Fox.
On. Yeah, hot Megan Fox sounds like a dude, though, to me.
No other dude has ever
Megan
called
Fox
me
Fox doesn't
hot.
Want to be famous, does she? She doesn't have a mechanism that stops her from, you know...
But
saying things
she
maybe
does
she shouldn't
have
say.
A valid point, though.
She's got a perfectly valid point, but she shouldn't be saying it. You can't tell fans to bleep off. You can't tell them that it's not good.
And yet she did. That's just crazy.
She wouldn't have did that if she was just Megan Fox.
I have the same argument with some guy. Yeah, I got unfriended just recently by some fan who was talking about, like, I was talking about episode 7. He was talking about, you're going to go see it anyway. And I'm like, no, I'm not. And he's like, yes, you are. Don't lie. You're going to go see it. I'm like, and now it's a point of principle. I'm like, no, I said I'm not. And then he flipped out, you know, and these people are just.
Aren't you the Star Wars guy? Shouldn't you be legally bound to go see that movie?
No.
Oh, okay.
I'm the George Lucas guy.
Oh.
I'm Star Wars George Lucas. Okay? Oh, I'm not okay. Star Wars Disney. Stop it.
All right, that's fair enough. Speaking of Disney. This actually, I find that our very own ex-intern might find interesting. Kenneth Jackson of Lancaster, Pennsylvania, filed a class-action lawsuit against Marvel Entertainment, claiming he was wrongly classified as an intern and unfairly denied minimum wages while working for the company. According to the documents filed, he worked at Marvel 5 days a week from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. from August through December of 2008 and seeks to, quote, recover unpaid minimum wages owed. The suit extends to all similarly situated persons who are presently or formerly employed by Marvel Entertainment LLC. As the documents claim, all of Marvel's New York interns were subjected to the same faulty, quote-unquote, employment practices, policies, and procedures, and includes in excess of 100 individuals.
Wait, 100 people are supposedly employees and doing work, but they're not being paid.
Right, because they were classified as interns.
Well, that's because Disney doesn't have a lot of money.
No,
Disney's broke. Why?
Yeah, that's why.
Well, this
no, hold on. How do you not have a job if you have a job? How do you not know you're going
well,
in there to be an intern?
It's like Office Space. When Milton is like downstairs and he hasn't worked for the company in years, and he still comes to work.
Yeah, but Milton's an idiot. How do these hundred people possibly be all idiots? 100 people didn't notice they weren't getting paid? 100 people.
Yeah, 100 in excess.
How long did they work for them?
Well, according to his, this was
don't say year.
August to December of 2008.
August to December. So you figure a couple of weeks go by, you don't get a check. You ask somebody, don't you?
Well,
you got to reevaluate what you're doing.
Yeah.
If you're not getting paid to do it.
A couple of months passed. I'm sure they had bills, monthly bills.
Well, they thought, you know, someone said, oh, you're an intern, but you're not going to be an intern. Maybe it's one of those things. They were wrongly classified as an intern. So they felt that they were doing regular work, but they were wrongly classified as an intern.
So what, you're an intern, but you're not going to be an intern?
You're an intern, but not an intern. Yes.
Not an intern.
This is not,
are they insane? Are they insane?
After the fact type thing. That's not an after the fact. Like, oh, I just noticed that you have me listed here as an intern instead of as an assistant. You know, you're an intern. You're not getting paid. You notice that right away. Anybody who works and doesn't get paid knows he's working and not getting paid for it almost immediately. That's the difference between working minimum wage and being a slave.
Well, maybe it's one of those things where, you know, you get paid like a couple of weeks afterwards or something.
No, the extent is 3 weeks. 3 weeks because you might have come in during a pay cycle, okay, in the middle of a pay cycle, mid-pay cycle, whatever.
Right.
They're not going to give you a half check. They're going to probably give you either a little less money than you're normally going to make per month, or you're going to get a little more because they're going to mix two pay cycles together. You're not going to go more than 3 weeks without getting paid.
5 months. 5 months they went without getting
five
paid.
Months.
5 months. that silence.
Obviously,
they all lived
at home.
Yes, they all lived at home, yes.
Yeah.
speaking of making
well,
money.
Well, then that's their fault. They're idiots. They're stone cold idiots.
All 100 of them. All excess of 100
of them. 100 of them.
All right, so speaking of people making money,
in
a recent interview, Michael Bay, Hassan's best friend, Michael Bay, has unofficially announced that he plans to hand off the Transformers franchise to someone else. Michael
Thank
says,
God.
There's kind of a new chapter, a new direction in movies that I want to make. I have a lot of stories to tell. It's all about flexing new muscles. Of course.
My God. The guy's a Oof.
Of course, this wouldn't be the first time that he said that he quit the franchise, because he quit after the third movie. He said,
yeah,
I'm done not making anymore.
They gave him a dump truck full of money,
and he said,
continued doing it.
But he said that he was inspired by the Transformers ride, which is what made him come back to Transformers number 4.
Oh, no, he was inspired by the money the ride was making.
Yeah, there you go.
I saw that movie. That's not the product of anybody's inspiration, okay? That is just absolutely more of the same dreck that he's produced for the first three movies. There was no new vision. There was no new escapade of visual, you know, enterprise. It was none of that. The guy is what he is. I'm not gonna name names. But
he's your best friend.
He's not my best friend. He's not. He's not.
But if you check our Facebook page,
if my
Hassan
best friend was on
glad.
Fire, I'd put him out.
Yes, if Michael Bay is listening right now, we will friend you.
Yeah.
I will.
All right. Let's see. We have. All right. So I'll do one last quick bit of news, and then we'll take our break because our guest is ready to go with us when we come
back.
Yay,
break.
Let's see. We'll do a little quick one. Charlie has, from the desk of Charlie Saladino, has something to say.
No, I could be all, you know, because I was tardy today.
Yes.
But did we go over Hollywood icon?
Lauren Bacall, yes.
We did?
Okay. Yes, we did. We
just
want to
make
Lauren
sure
Bacall.
She's mentioned.
Lauren Bacall, Charles Keating.
Because I met her one time, and I thought she was just marvelous.
So then why don't you share the meeting, and we'll take our break right from there. So share your story.
As you all know by now, I worked for ABC.
Yes.
And I was on my way out of Good Morning America, and I opened the door, and standing right in front of me, ready to come in and do a post-tape, was Lauren Bacall. And it was sort of the Ralph Cramden effect in a minute, you know, humming a humming a hum. But after a while, we chatted a bit, and she was very lovely, very classy, very, you know.
So she did have the same presence that she had on screen in person.
Oh, my God, yeah. I mean, for me, it was like a living legend walking at you, an icon, a Hollywood icon. And, you know, just the bogey thing and the
right.
key logo thing and movies that I loved with them in it. just that, coming, like, opening the door and seeing the living legend before you, it's not, not many people could do, you know, say that.
Did she give you any words of wisdom or words of that you took with you?
Yes,
all these, what
yes.
did she say?
She said, "Please get the hell out of my way. I'm late for post-date." No, she didn't.
So I just, that would be funny if she did.
It would be great if
what
she
did. What
if
the living legend said, "Get out of my way."
You're like,
get out of my way. Yes, get out of my way, peasant man.
Yes, move, small person.
No, and no, she thanked me for opening the door, and I'm saying, "Oh my God, this is just." She said, "You know," and we started chatting because, of course, then I'm opening other doors into the studio, showing her where the studio was, and very, very classy, very Lauren Bacall, whatever, you know, she was in interviews and just a classy lady.
Oh, cool. So with that, we're ready for our break. We'll be right back with Came From Radio.
Hi, this is Amory. You've heard my voice open and close the show. Now we want to hear your voice. If you have a business or product, you can record a commercial here. We offer 30 and 60 second spots. For more information, contact Mark at mfc_studios@hotmail.com. And now, here's some music.
Master, I don't think you quite realize what you got here. So why don't you just ruminate whilst I illuminate the possibilities? Well, Alibaba had them 40 thieves. Sherazade had 1,000 tales. But Master, you in luck, cause up your sleeves, you got a brand of magic never fails. You got some power in your corner now. Some heavy ammunition in your camp. You got some punch, big hands. Your blue and house, all you gotta do is rub that lamp. And I'll say,
Mr. Aladdin, sir, what will your pleasure be?
Let me take your order, jot it down.
You ain't never had a friend like me.
Life is your restaurant, and
I'm your maitre d'.
Come on, whisper what it is you want. You ain't never had a friend like me.
Yes, sir, we pride ourselves on service.
You're the boss, the king, the Shah. Say what you wish, it's yours, true dish. About a little more baklava. As I'm a column A, try all of column B. I'm in the mood to help you, dude. You ain't never had a friend like me. Mama. No, no. Can your friends do this? Can your friends do that? Can your friends pull this out their little hat? Can your friends go,
hey, looky here.
Can your friends go abracadabra, let it rip, and then make the sucker disappear? So don't you sit there, slap your body hide. I'm here to answer all your business threats. You got me bona fide, certified. You got a genie toy charge to fail. I got a power to help you out. So what you wish, I really want to know. You got a list that's 3 miles long, no doubt we'll all.
Wow, that was hot. Now, back to our show.
And welcome back to Came From Radio.
Oh, it's so great to be back. It really is.
Speaking along with Hassan Godwin on the phone, and our very own Charlie Saladino, Kara the intern, and Brian the engineer in the studio. So that was a Kara intern problem. We'll blame her because she's the ex-intern. And she's not getting paid anyway, so it'll be all right.
She knows she's an intern, right?
That's tough. Yep. So today, this week, we're going to be talking with Redline Comics Stronghold artist, as I'm holding up in hand my web camera on the phone.
I'm closer.
Yes, there you go. Kevin Roberts. Say hi, Kevin.
Hey, how you doing?
Wow, you sound kind of like Hassan.
Kind of like a who?
you sound kind of like our other co-host, Hassan Godwin. You have the same.
No, he doesn't.
That's cool. You really do. It's kind of a little freaky for me.
All right, I'm gonna keep my mouth shut then.
So Kevin, we met
at the. That's not what Hassan does. So.
So Kevin, we met at the New York Comic Con, and you were actually. My first official tweet that I did about you guys at the New York Comic Con. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and tell us about the book?
Well, I live in Richmond, Virginia, where I work on my comics and my freelance art, and you know, I work part time to keep the lights on. But we went to school together at VCU, I graduated in 2007, and I guess around junior or senior year is when we came up with the idea for the book, and we've been working on it, you know, in some form, shape, or form since then.
So. That would be you and Brian Visaggio, right?
Correct.
So, what got you into comics?
Well, I was into them when I was a kid. My dad would, you know, take me to the drugstore. This was before the crash in the mid-90s. He'd take me out, you know, to the grocery store, the drugstore, and they just had them. They were everywhere. So, you know, you see Superman and Spider-Man and Sonic the Hedgehog and all these guys. You know, you want to see what's going on, so you pick those books up. And they were, you know, like $1.50 back then. And, you know, some older cats will scoff and be like, they were 10 cents when I was a kid, but... You know, $1.50 was, you know, is a million times better than what they're at now. But, so that was still reasonably cheap where my dad would just, you know, buy them if I wanted some. And, so I had a few books that I read, and, I guess at some point I kind of stopped reading. I guess it was around the death of Superman is when I kind of got out of comics, but that wasn't the sole reason. I kind of, just got more into video games. And then when I went to college, Richmond is a big comic town. Like there's a VCU is a big arts has a big art scene, and there's some local comic shops that everybody loves. So my friends in the art program got me really, you know, pulled me back into the comic scene, and just kind of went from there. So they were easily accessible, and you know, everybody about around town was, that I associated with at least, was excited about them.
So why don't you tell us what the book is about? What is Stronghold about?
Stronghold is about an alien occupation because they invaded and they won. The invasion is over. You know, most stories are about them invading and us fighting back and winning. They invaded and they won. It was easy. And it takes place 20 years after the invasion. So it's kind of an alternate timeline where they invaded, say, early 90s, and our story picks up in the near future. And we're dealing with the alternate history of Earth since, you know, that's 20, 25 years ago.
Now, when you were working with Brian on the project, were you solely the artist, as in he came to you and said, draw this, draw that, draw this, or did you have input on how everything would pan out?
Well, it was me, Brian, and a third guy named Martin who came up with the idea. And over time, Martin is just kind of moved on and become less involved, but the way it did work and always has is he approached me and said, we have this idea, and for what's called a henshin, which in Japan means like transformation and or transformation story. And I said, oh, I have ideas like that, you know, in my sketchbook right now. I have my sketchbook on me. And so then we got to work, and we've been collaborating on the story since then. So we both work out what's going to happen. And we, you know, sometimes we gel perfectly. Sometimes we fight, we bicker. And sometimes Brian will have an idea and I'm like, I don't know, let's do it another way. Or I have an idea and he's like, no, that's not really what I had in mind. But basically we come to each other about everything that we want to do. And we compromise or we veto or, you know, this and that.
So it's more of a... group effort type deal, as opposed to, I guess, the way most of the mainstream comics are done, which is, you know, the writer writes the story, artist draws the stuff, and then the inker goes over it, and the editor kind of just puts it all together, right?
Right. Like, here's the script, and this is what you got to draw.
Do you find that to be easier or harder doing it that way? Because if you're collaborating with it, you're also writing stuff as well as drawing. So is it take away from your creative process as just drawing stuff, which is what you want to do? Or do you find it to be an easier thing to work as a team?
I think it's a different set of problems. And it's more rewarding to work as a team because it's as much my baby as it is his. And so I have as much of a stake in it. And it's just as rewarding to see it come to life. So Brian does the writing proper. He's the writer, but when we're in the planning stages, we discuss plot and character arc. So we're collaborating on what's going to happen, and it's his job to decide how and in what detail.
What I read the book, and what I found most interesting was that when you guys gave me the pitch, when I met you guys, you were saying how it was like a Power Ranger type book in the future with aliens, and how there's no one villain or hero. Everybody has their own different viewpoints on the same situation. You can actually put yourself into one of those different viewpoints. When I read the book, I felt that the quote-unquote Power Ranger stuff was detracting from the story. I felt that the story in and of itself was really good, how the character interaction was in the future with all that stuff, and then it felt like the Power Ranger stuff was thrown in at the end. But I remember you distinctly said that it was the reverse, of that's how you started off, was with the Power Ranger stuff, and then you wound up going this way. What caused the switch?
Well, we... when we first started the book, I guess in, I guess it was 2006, 2007, we had a totally different premise where they were fighting the active invasion. So we introduced you to them, like, in the middle of the story, and which created a lot of problems because we weren't starting from the beginning and nobody has any idea what, you know, what's going on. So with the reboot, like, no one knows who these characters were. So with the reboot, we decided, okay, we need to bring people in from the ground up, and we overhauled everything. So instead of them fighting an invasion, they're fighting an occupying force, and it was just a more interesting, you know, setup. But it was always going to be a Henshin book, and those concepts. I guess you have the first three issues, so those concepts aren't immediately apparent until I guess Marveler shows up. The guy gives them their abilities and everything, but that's been the plan the whole time. And what we wanted at the end of the day was, you know, an action sci-fi comic with a grounded premise that people can immediately, you know, latch onto. And, you know, with the zeitgeist of the Occupy movement and, you know, all the turmoil that's going on around the world where, you know, people are standing up against occupying regimes or forces, it just was more relevant. So we're setting it up and we're kind of easing people in to all the mysticism and the science fiction before we, you know, bring everything together. So we initially had the idea to hit the ground running and then backload, you know, exposition, but it just wasn't working. So this approach has been a lot more effective.
All right, so we got the trade paperback I have in front of me. How many more books are left to go?
Well, I'm currently working on issue 5. Issue 4 is available on Comixology and Amazon if you want a print copy. And issue 5 is almost done. I'm on, like, the last 4 pages. And so then that'll be online in a few more weeks. We're trying to get it done in time for Baltimore and obviously New York, which comes in October. And then New York Comic Con, I should say, for everybody listening. So this is basically a story in 3 acts. And this is basically act 1. And we're planning, it could be anywhere from 10 to 15 issues. And we're on issue 5 right now. I've got issues 6 and 7. Brian's already finished the, scripts for those, and I can, as soon as I finish issue 5, I can jump into those two. I'm hoping to have issue 7 done by the end of the year, but issue 6 will still definitely be done by the end of the year.
So as a conglomerative effort, as you're working on this project, at what point do you decide, all right, this is how it's going to be, I'm going to have to draw this right now, or is there any point where you're still working on it, as you said you're doing issue 6 right now, do you go back and go, hey, Brian, I want to change this, or I want to change it, or is it already just set in stone as we are, as you're going along? What point does that happen where it's done?
Oh, all the time. We go back and forth, and sometimes he'll stick to his gun and say, no, that has to work this way because that's how I've set it up, and that's how the dominoes are lined up. But as I, you know, I'll read the script and then say, okay, that's awesome. Let's do it, and I'll get to work. And then so I'm doing my sketches, my thumbnails, and... then new ideas will come to me, and I'll say, hey, why don't we do this, or I'll pitch something to him, and sometimes he's like, that's great, let's do it, or sometimes he's like, no, that's not going to work, and he'll explain why, and then we just, you know, we move on. But, and then we've been adjusting our pipeline, I guess, as far as get going from start to finish, as far as layouts to finished pages and stuff, because we brought on an editor named Heather Antos, who is going to be kind of a big deal soon. And but you didn't hear that from me. And she edits Brian's scripts, so she's been a real boon for us because we needed an editor. I will give Brian pointers and suggestions and stuff, but I'm chomping at the bit to get started. I want to draw, so I don't go through a script with a fine-tooth comb the way someone who is a trained editor would. So she's helped improve the quality, the overall quality of the book since she was brought up. So I'm grateful to have her around. And it's a fluid process where I draw, and even once I've done final layouts and I'm working on final inks and colors, a new idea will occur to me, and I have to run it by Brian. Say, hey, what if we try this? And he may, co-sign on it, or he might veto it. So the ideas never stop coming, as long as you stay working on something. Sometimes you might get an idea and that's not going to work. There's no time. I have to get this done, and I have to stick to what we planned, or else we got to rewrite this whole page from scratch. I actually did have to rewrite a whole page from scratch. It was just an action scene that was getting a little too complicated. So I pitched something to them, and then they, thought about it for a minute, and then they okayed it, and then we went back and forth on it. So it's a constant process of knowing when to change something and when to let it be in the interest of time.
So, Hassan, I know you are also a comic book artist, who I would say is kind of a perfectionist there, Hassan. Do you have a question for a fellow artist?
Well, what is the overall, well, this is a stupid question, but what is your overall goal? Like, what is your deepest hope to accomplish from all the work that you're doing?
You mean, like, in life? Or just
like
an artist in general, or
like professionally, like in this particular project, or are you in it for the love of it? Are you in it because there's specific kind of stories that you want to tell, or specific kind of point of view that you want to take, or there's no wrong answer. I just wanted to.
Oh sure. Well, a couple things. It's for the love of it, and I think it has to be because it's so much damn work. You just have to. You have to love it, or else you'll eventually hate it, and it'll be sooner than later that you do. And so I love doing it. And so when I meet people who can draw but don't necessarily love to draw, so I don't push them, because you have to love doing it. To if you want to do it, 8 hours a day, 10 to 12 hours a day, it has to be something you really care about. It's what I'm passionate about, and because, you have to, eat and have a roof over your head, my goal is to be able to support myself on it. So if I can get to the point where I'm able to live off of my art, that is I guess that's a 10 for me on my scale, is just being able to live comfortably off my art. So right now I'm just paying dues and putting in the groundwork.
All right. Name your three top influences.
My top influences?
Yeah, artistically.
Top influences? Gosh, that's hard.
I know. I'm sorry.
What time we got? man.
Name one.
These aren't even like the top here. I'm just gonna take the first three that come to my mind. Alex Ross, Yoji Shinkawa, who does the art for the Metal Gear Solid game.
Right.
I need a third one.
It's not a test.
Or a requirement.
I'm gonna do three. Jendi Tartakovsky, the guy who did Dexter's Laboratory and Samurai Jack, and Star Wars, Clone Wars.
Okay, yeah, the original Clone Wars.
Let me rephrase that whole question to make life easier for our guest. Before you were even into comics, what is the first thing that made you say, I want to do this? Or who was the first person you saw that made you say, I want to do this?
Probably, well, my earliest memory is, as far as pictures, is Ninja Turtles. So that has to be it, because I've been drawing as long as I can remember, and I've been loving Ninja Turtles as long as I can remember. So that was probably a starting point. We're talking late 80s, early 90s. And I was born in 85, so this was like, you know, syndication, second run stuff. Yeah. But that was, you know, one of the first, you know, cartoons that I saw that had an impact on me. So that had to have been it. And my mom tells me since I was like two, you know, I was drawing on whatever I get my hands on.
The walls and the and the refrigerator and stuff you're not supposed to draw on, I mean, like that, and pictures.
She'd make me clean the walls at 2 years old. She made me clean the walls, and then she'd give me some paper. And then I learned quickly that you draw on paper and not walls.
Should have gave you the paper first.
Is that important to start at an early age to really to get into art? I mean, there's some people who what they say have that natural talent of loving to draw. Is it important to do, or is it a skill you can actually be taught as you can go to school for that type of thing?
You can be taught. I think talent is Bob Ross put it this way. He said talent is a pursued interest. And what I tell people is, because I thought about it at some point, is I'm an artist because people told me I was good at it. If people didn't encourage me, I guess I was good for my age, you know, but you look back at your old stuff and you're like, ugh. But if people hadn't encouraged me, I'd probably gotten into engineering or something. But people were like, wow, Cam, you're really good at that. And my parents, and then I realized how lucky I was, my parents encouraged me. And they said, you know, you can be successful doing anything in this country. People become millionaires selling lotions and pots and whatever. So if you like to draw, then find a way to, you know, be good at that and be successful at it. So they always encouraged, you know, me and my sisters, regardless of what we were into. So,
good parents.
That is an important part of childhood. If your kid is into, you know, art, then encourage them, and they'll pursue it. So I got, it's really, like, people think there's a trick. So there is no trick. It's just brute force. Like, you get good at drawing by drawing a lot. Like, it has to become a habit. I got in trouble in fourth grade. I remember distinctly, like, calling out in the hall. My mom was called because every assignment I did, every last one, I drew in the margins, you know, that college rule paper. All the margins were full of, you know, full of doodles. And I was doing my work. I was an AB student. But I would finish my assignment, and I wouldn't turn it in. I'd just sit and just doodle. And just it was a habit. Like, it was a compulsion.
So that was frowned upon?
Say what?
That was frowned upon to actually do your work, be an A student, and doodle?
Well, they didn't, like, me doodling all over the paper. So it's like, yeah, you did your assignment, but, the paper's a complete mess. I'm like, that's dumb, but
I'm curious.
You gotta play by the rules. You know, they're like, you're good artist, you know, you're very talented, but you can't draw your homework. So, you know, they're trying to meet me halfway, so I dealt with it, but
I'm very curious. You said that they called your mom into school for this. What did she have to say about this at this meeting?
Well, she understood where it was from, and she didn't come down hard on me. She was like, you know, yeah, Kevin, don't draw on your assignments. And it was like, all right, fine. Like, it wasn't a huge, you know, ordeal, but it was like, yeah, my teacher was like, come on, man, like, stop doing that.
Knock it off.
Like, draw on other sheets of paper, but don't draw on your assignments.
It kind of tells me that you just had the need to draw. You just had to draw, no matter where you were. You just had to do it, and you found whatever was around to do it with. That's actually quite an interesting aspect that I don't think we've ever had somebody who was just like born to draw. I guess that's the phrase I would use, that you were born to draw. And what's nice is that you also mentioned how the family structure was helping. And we say a lot of times on the show that the parents are really The person's responsible for the kids. It's not the TV. It's not the video games. It's the parents. So let's say, for your kids down the line, what advice would you give to them if they had a passion for something?
Find a way to get paid to do it.
That's
literally it. If that's what you love to do, then be as good as you possibly can at it and see if people will pay you to do it. And that's literally it. And then just get out of their way. and help them when you can. If they're like, hey, I need, you know, this or that, or, you know, I have this idea. But because our parents helped us publish our first set of books in like 2006. You know, because we were just in college, we were broke, and we were like, oh man, we finished our first issue, but we had no money. And so they were like, okay, so they all put in like a third of the printing cost for us to do a little limited print run. And, you know, it's looking back at your old work, you're like, man, that wasn't very good. But, you know, the point was, you know, they supported us.
Wow. That's really cool.
They're behind us.
We have less than 5 minutes, so this is the time we're going to promote any websites or anybody you want to do shout-outs to, especially your parents, which sound like awesome people. Now's the time to do it.
Yeah, shout-out to Mom and Dad for conceiving me and supporting me and being awesome in general. Shout-out to Brian, who couldn't make it today. Shout-out to everybody who supported us on Kickstarter. Just want to plug the website. You can catch us on Facebook, Stronghold Comic. You can catch us on Twitter, and Brian's under the Stronghold Comic. You know, Twitter/Stronghold Comic. That's it. I'm on Twitter under Kemiro Art, KEMIRO Art. And you can buy the book. It's dirt cheap, 3 comics, 99 cents on Comixology. That's the digital version. Comixology.com, just look for Stronghold. And you can buy printed copies on Amazon. Stronghold, hope is not yet lost. And I think that's it.
Do you find that digital is better or worse than printed comics?
Depends on what you're trying to do. So it's better for reaching more people quickly. And it's worse when you want to put something in somebody's hands. So, you know, we got the book on digital. It doesn't cost us anything. It's out there. You can get people's attention on the internet. But for the conventions, you know, we need to put something in people's hands. We need to show them, you know, this is something you can take with you. This is something that, you know, you can hold. So I think comics, you know, one doesn't beat the other. Well, they need to coexist.
All right, so we're ready for our final thoughts. Kevin, since you're our guest, would you have any final thoughts for us? Anything you want to mention out there for the people listening?
If you're into comics and you want to make a comic, just make it. People are always asking me, you know, how do you make a comic? And it's like, well, we just kind of sat down and decided we're going to make one. And once you have something, then you can show it to people. And you can see what you did, then you can, okay, this sucks, this is good, and then you can make changes. But if you're a creative person, but you don't know how to get started, you just kind of have to start doing something. Because you can have all the ideas you want, but if you don't have anything you can show to people and see for yourself, then you're not going to do much of anything.
All right. Charlie,
so the overall idea is make something.
All right. That's fair enough. Charlie, you have any final thoughts?
Yeah, I was just going to say it's such a labor of love for all the people that we have on, especially Kevin included. And I think people should see their children here, because it's amazing. It's just not something you see every day, and the story is great, illustrations are great, and these people work hard. And I think everybody should, you know, get this book, Stronghold.
Hassan, final thought?
I think the thought of, if you love something, find a way to get paid to do it, even though it is very capitalist, is still probably the best advice you could probably give about it. So I reiterate that. I concur with that.
My final thought is I really appreciate Kevin for calling in all the way from Virginia. Hopefully Brian will be able to come in and to the studio as we had hoped for to do a whole talk about it. But I really enjoy the book. The superhero stuff was, like I said, in the books that I read, the superhero stuff at the tail end, but the story itself was very good, very well done. I look forward to seeing the other stuff. You said you're going to be at Baltimore Comic Con and the New York Comic Con in October, so we'll hope to see you guys there. That about does it for this week on It Came From the Radio. Join us right here and every week on WGBB. If you miss any part of our show, you can go to our website, www.itcamefromradio.com. The archives will be up in a week or so. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at ICTFR. And if you get the TuneIn app, you can always listen to us on the multimedia devices. And we will see you next week. Thanks again, Kevin.
Thanks for having me.
You have been listening to It Came From the Radio with Mark Torres. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests did not necessarily reflect the views of WGBB, the owners, or staff. And now we return you to your earthly scheduled broadcast.
In the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.